This is HPR episode 2756 entitled Bash Tips 20 and is part of the series Bash Scripting. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 33 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is deleting arrays, positional and special parameters in Bash.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello everybody, this is Dave Morris for Hacker Public Radio. Now, when I finished my last episode in the Bash Tips series, I said I was going to have a bit of a break. I've had a small break, but not as much as I had planned. And the reason for doing that was because I suddenly realized I'd forgotten something from the topic of arrays in Bash. So I thought I'd put together a show just filling in that gap, tell you what it is in a minute, and would add in another topic just to fill things out a bit. So this is sort of supplementary to the Bash arrays business, and I've called it Tidying Loose End. So I need to tell you how to delete arrays and bits of arrays and stuff. So that's what I'm going to talk about. And I also have avoided, not deliberately really, avoided talking much about the positional and special parameters in Bash. That's the ones we've seen in passing, which we call $1, $2, things like $hash and so forth. I'm going to cover a few of them in this episode to sort of fill in some of the holes that exist. And while I'm about it, I'm just going to mention the titles. The titles of these shows used to be silly, quite deliberately silly, and I stopped doing that by episode 14. I thought the joke was getting a bit tired and never had any feedback, so I assumed that it was universally derided, perhaps, or ignored. Anyway, I think a few people missed them, because I've seen a few slightly more positive comments since then. And a certain HBR colleague was found vandalizing my new style titles as they were being posted. I won't say who that is. So I've started adding them inside the notes of the older shows, and I'm adding one here. I went back and added some to the shows that had already got uploaded. So this episode's homage to silliness is Some Collateral Bash Tips, which we will assume that's what this episode is called. Okay, let's get to business. It's the unset command that we need to look at. This is a built-in command that originated before Bash in the days of the Bourne shell. And you can use it to remove variables, arrays, parts of arrays, or functions. The command syntax is fairly simple. It just consists of the word unset, followed by one or more of three options. And the name of a variable or function or whatever. Now, it's the name of the thing, and it's not the thing substituted, so it doesn't have a dollar sign in front of it. The other thing about unset is that if you try and unset something that doesn't exist, then it's just ignored. It doesn't cause your script to halt or anything like that. So let's look briefly at the options. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on them here. Leave them for other shows down the road. So the hyphen V option simply means that the name or list of names that follow unset refer to shell variables. So I've got a little example here where a variable fruit is set to the name of a fruit. Suddenly had a hankering for certain fruit that you can tend to find only in the Far East. Rambutan, great delicious thing. Anyway, fruit equals rambutan, then echo fruit equals, fruit is, and then $fruit, and you get back fruit is rambutan. If you do unset -v fruit, and then do that echo again, then you just get back fruit is. So a variable that's been unset in that way has been completely removed. And it's not the same as setting the variable to null. So there's another little snippet of code here which demonstrates that. This time I'm setting fruit to another fruit I rather miss, mangosteen, glorious thing. And I'm using an if statement afterwards that tests to see whether the fruit variable exists or not. And I'm using the slightly confusing hyphen v and the name of the variable inside double square brackets. You'll remember that that returns true if the shell variable named in there exists and has been assigned a value, and false otherwise. A value also includes null. It exists with the null value. So I get back the answer. It's just the same if statement all on one line, just repeated several times here. And get back the answer exists. Not surprising, we just created it. Then I do fruit equals nothing. That's how you set it to null. Do the if test again and get back the answer exists. Then if you do unset hyphen v fruit, run that if a third time, you get back the answer doesn't exist. So that's just to prove the point about existence and whether it's null or not. I've been slightly confused about that in the past, so I thought in case you are, I would just explain a little bit. If you use the hyphen f option, then the names that are given after unset refer to shell function, and these are removed. I'm not going to say much more about this because we haven't really looked at functions in a formal way, but I plan to do so before too long. If you give no option at all, then unset will check to see is what each name actually is. If it's a variable, then it's removed. And if it doesn't exist as a variable, but it's a function, then that is removed. So you need to be a little bit careful if you're doing this, because you might type it wrong and accidentally name a function that has a similar name to the variable. Pretty unlikely, I'd have thought, but just be aware. You can run bash in a strict POSIX mode, in which it's defined that functions can only be removed if the hyphen f option is given. So that's the sort of thing that POSIX tends to do. It tends to tighten up on some of these slightly more relaxed areas. The final one is hyphen n, and this is for removing variables which have the name ref option set. Now, we haven't really mentioned that so far. We're going to look at that as we look at functions, most likely. I haven't quite planned those shows out, but I've definitely got it on the list to cover. Name ref is a really nice feature, I think, that I definitely want to talk about and explain. So a couple more things. If a variable has been declared explicitly and has been marked as read-only, we looked in episode 19, the last one, at using declare hyphen r, or the alias for that, which is read-only, and creating variables that way. If you try and unset them, you will not be allowed to do so. There's no way of deleting them, in fact, other than closing down the shell in which you created. I wanted to just hammer home the issue of putting a dollar in front of the name after the unset command. So I've got a little example code here, and I've got two variables. One is A, and its contents are the letter B. So I set A to quotes B. Then I set second variable B to some string, actually use contents of variable b as my string. So I then echo these two things with an expression that says, a string that says a equals dollar a, b equals dollar b, and you get back a equals b, and then b equals contents of variable b. Okay, so we've got these two variables set up in this way. Now, if you mistakenly typed unset dollar a, which, as you know, you shouldn't do at all, but you know, we all make mistakes. Then if you ran that echo again, you would get back the answer A equals B and B equals nothing. So in other words, dollar A has been substituted to return the single letter B, and the unset has operated on that B and has deleted the variable b. I suppose that could be useful in some contexts, but I think it's more likely to cause confusion. So it's another reason why you really should not do that. So hopefully you'll bear that in mind when and if you come to do this sort of stuff. So let's get to the array part of this. You can, I think this was an addition. Yeah, it must have been, because unset came into existence before arrays were added. It came before bash itself. So you can unset an array. So unset the name of the array and it'll delete it. The whole array will vanish. No dollar sign, remember. You can also use array square brackets with an asterisk in them or with an at sign. No dollar and no need for the curly brackets. That's not ambiguous. And you can remove individual elements of an array as well by using the name of the array and some subscript. So the way I've written these out in the notes here is the sort of syntax diagram that you'll see in the documentation. There's no actual values. You couldn't necessarily type these in, but they're sort of generic descriptions of how you do it. And I'll explain why I just said that in a moment. So if you're unsetting an array element, then the subscript must be numeric or an expression which returns a number if you're dealing with an indexed array. And if it's an associative array, then subscript needs to be a string or an expression returning a string. And you need to quote that variable if it's going to return something that contains spaces. And the index for an indexed array can be negative, as we found earlier on in the bash array shows, and the element that's going to get removed is relative to the end of the array. Now, when you do this sort of work using shell check to check what you're doing, and I've mentioned shell check, it's a script checking tool which will check your bash scripts. It advises that when the subscripted arrays are used with unset, and that includes the ones with square bracket asterisk or square bracket at sign, the whole thing be quoted to avoid problems with glob expansion. And I've done that in the examples that I've got in the episode. You can often get away with it, but it's the sort of case where the script's working fine and then you make some change to it, not realizing that there's a potential pitfall waiting to catch you. The shell check thing helps to avoid that type of thing. So I've got an example which is called, which you can download of course, bash20_ex1.sh, and in it I'm trying to demonstrate array element deletion, the sort of things that it does. It's a long script, doesn't contain anything very world-shattering, and I'm hopeful that when you go to look at it, you'll see that it's pretty self-evident what it will do. It's going to use random variable to select an index out of the array, for example. And I'm seeding it, first of all, just to make sure you get a different random sequence every time you call it. I'm setting it to the result of a command substitution using date plus percent capital N. That returns the current nanosecond counter from the clock on your machine. So you get a nice multi-digit integer number that should ensure that random is seeded from it with a good starting point. So let's look at indexed arrays. So I'm declaring an indexed array which I'm calling IARray, and then I'm populating it with map file, and map file is using one of these process substitution things which calls printf with the argument %s/n, and it's getting a brace expansion with the letters A to C in the first pair of braces and D to F in the second. So this will produce the pairs of letters A, D, A, E, etc. up to C, F. So that will simply create that number of elements in the array. The script echoes the number of elements that it actually got, and then it uses declare -p to print out that. So you can see what it produces. And it's always going to be the same. So you get 9 elements. It's there's an example of how it's run in the notes. And you get element 0 is AD, element 1 is AE, etc., etc. So the next thing is to choose a random element. So to do that, I simply create a variable called ind, which is set to the arithmetic expression using random and the mod operator percent. And on the right-hand side of that is the number of elements in the array, which is use the expression dollar open curly bracket hash IA double square brackets asterisk close curly bracket. So that will produce a random number between 0 and 9. Then the echo that follows echoes element and then whatever that number is to be removed, and it reports what its contents are. So you'll see that in the notes here. The script then reports the length of the array now that one element's been removed, and lo and behold, it's reduced down to 8 elements. And then it uses declare hyphen p on the array, and it prints out the contents, which you will see now consists of one less element. It's not world-shattering stuff. It's pretty damn obvious what's going on here. So moving on to the associative array, an associative array, I've got one called A array, A double. I really must come up with better names. And that's declared with a hyphen capital A. Now, in this particular case, I am initializing this array in a for loop, and I'm using the contents of the indexed array to populate this. But there's a hole. So my for loop begins at 0 and goes up to the number of elements in the array. But there's going to be a hole in this array where there's a gap between one index and the next. So I've actually used in double square brackets the hyphen V thing that checks to see whether a given element exists or not, and it only adds to the associative array if the element exists. So the key for the associative array is the contents of the index array. So it's A D E and so on. And the contents of that element is going to be the number of the element in the index. Sounds a lot more confusing when I say it that way than it really. Hopefully it'll be this when you look at the output. So I report back the length of the associative array, which is 8. Remember, the array we just built it from had been chopped, had one element removed. And it reports back the keys using the expression that we've looked at earlier on, returns keys of associative arrays. They come back in an arbitrary order, though. Then I go through in a loop through these keys and print them out. But what I've done here is I've echoed the keys. I've actually echoed the keys by using the contents of the indexed array. It's a bit of a cheat. And I've sorted them. So you will get from that loop the array name square brackets AD equals 0. Then AF equals 1. AE equals 1, I should say, AF equals 2, and so on and so forth. So you can actually see, without using declare hyphen P, what's in this array. So I then declare an array, an index array called keys, and I fill it with the keys from the associative array using a printf. Then the whole point of doing this was so that I could then use another random thing to generate a random key and delete that element. So that's reduced the length down to 7. And final thing the script does is to print out using declare hyphen p the contents of the associative. Seems a hell of a complicated thing now I look at it, considering what it is, but hopefully you'll find that useful. That's all I'm going to say about arrays and unset. Let's look at the positional parameters. These are the shell's command line arguments, as it says in the GNU Bash manual. We've seen these in all the various shows that have been done to talk about Bash scripting. They're denoted by numbers starting at 1, so $1 means parameter 1. Now, you can create these at the time the shell's invoked, But it's pretty unusual to do that. It's more likely that you'll see them being used in scripts. When a shell script invoked any positional parameters, call, you know, XYZ your script and then put after A, B, C, D, and these are the arguments for the script, and they're going to be placed into $1, $2, $3, etc. So in generic terms, the positional parameters are referred to as $n, where n is a number starting from 1, or you can write it as dollar, open curly bracket, n, close curly bracket. You need to use the one with the curly brackets or braces if the number after the dollar is 10 or above. So Bash can only parse the case where there's a single digit following the dollar. You know, there's various contexts where it's going to be confused anyway. So might be a good idea to do that all the time, though I must admit I never do. I just add them in. There's obvious ambiguity, or if I'm trying to access parameter 10 or 12 or whatever. And you can't assign to these things because the variable name is actually a number. So in order to do it, you'd have to be able to type something like 1 equals 42, and that makes no sense. It's not allowed. There are ways in which you can set them, mind you. I'll come on to that in a moment. Right now, in fact, there's a set command. Now, the set command is massively complex. It does everything. I think I've touched on it before. I can't remember. But one of its features is it allows the positional parameters to be cleared or redefined. So you use this feature of it, and I'll touch on other capabilities of set as I go through these various shows. But I'm not going to talk about any more today. To get it to set the positional, clear or set the positional parameters, you type set space two hyphens space and then a list of arguments. And that clears the positional parameters, and if there are arguments provided, it's optional, it puts them into the parameters. There's also a version followed by a single hyphen and an optional list of arguments. And if there are arguments, then they replace the positional parameters. But if no arguments are given, then the positional parameters remain unchanged. So set followed by a single hyphen doesn't clear. If there's no arguments, nothing happens. If you give it arguments, they will replace the positional parameters that exist. It's weird. I find this weird anyway. But it's really useful. The other one is there's a command called shift, which is a Bourn shell built-in command from before Bash. And what it does is to shift the positional parameters to the left. It consists, the syntax is shift followed by an optional number. And if that number is omitted, then it's assumed to be 1. The positional parameters from n, this is the explanation of how it works from the documentation. I don't find this useful. Anyway, the positional parameters from n plus 1 onwards are renamed to $1. So, if the positional parameters are haggis, neeps, tatties, it was Burns night when I was writing, or somewhere around that, where are we? The Scots eat haggis, neeps, and tatties. Anyway, if that's your three parameters, so $1 is haggis, $2 is neeps, $3 is tatties, the command shift 2 will result in haggis and neeps get falling off and the single parameter being tatties, which will now be in $1. It's an error if you try and shift more places than there are parameters, and the n to the shift, the number after the shift, cannot be negative. If you make an error, then you get a non-zero status back, but the positional parameters have not changed. I've got an example or some little snippets that are coming up shortly to demonstrate some of this, but I want to discuss a few of the special parameters before I get to that. Now, a number of these are related to the positional parameters, and we'll look at these preferentially just now. The GNU Bash manual contains more detail than I've actually shown in the notes. I've put a sort of modified transcript of what it says in the manual here, so you've got it in one place. So let's look at these parameters. The first one is the asterisk. So you'd normally write this as dollar asterisk. And what this does is expands to the positional parameters starting from 1. And if you don't put it in double quotes, each parameter expands to a separate word. When you put it in double quotes, you get a string formed by concatenating each of the positional parameters separated by the delimiter inside the IFS parameter, the IFS variable, I should say. So this is where the concept of dollar, in quotes, dollar, open curly bracket, array, open square brackets, asterisk, close square brackets, close curly brackets, close quotes, which we've been looking at throughout the bash array stuff. I think this one must have come before the arrays. Yeah, it will certainly have arrived before the array. And that's why the arrays idea is using a similar thing. Next one is the at sign, and you would normally write that as dollar at. And that expands the position parameters as well, starting from one. And if the expression's in double quotes, then you get back a list of quoted words. And that's similar to the thing where you put an array name followed by square brackets and an at sign and the effects that you get there. And I've discussed this on several occasions, so I won't go into any more detail. Third one is the hash mark. Dollar hash means the number of positional parameters as a decimal number. So you'll often see if tests being done that do things like if dollar hash is not 2 or something, because then produce an error, because your script requires two arguments and it hasn't got them. And the final one is 0. So dollar 0, this expands to the name of the shell or the shell script. I'll explain the business about creating a shell and fiddling with it in a moment. But shell script, I certainly find a more useful context in which to do this. And we look at shell scripts loads of times, so it's no big deal. A lot of this also applies to functions, shell functions, but we're going to deal with them in a few shows down the road. So what I've done here is I have put together a couple of examples. The first one is just, I think what I did was I put together a whole list of commands. I typed a list of commands at a terminal and captured them in their output to demonstrate things. And I'm splitting them up into little groups so I can then explain each bit. But it's not a thing you can download because we'll see why in a moment. The second one is a downloadable script. Let's start on the snippets. So it starts with a dollar prompt, and at the dollar prompt, /bin/bash has been typed, followed by space, -s, and then the words hacker public radio. So what's happening there is a new shell is being created. The -s option runs it interactively and allows arguments. You then get back a prompt. Prompt doesn't look any different from the first one, but it is. You're now in a sub-shell. And there I echo $0. Well, $0, if you recall, is the name of the shell or the shell script. And I get back as an answer, /bin/bash. So we invoked bin/bin/bash, and that's what's in $0. Then echo $#, we get back 3, because there were those variables, those 3 arguments, which are now in the 3 positional parameters, and so the answer is 3. Next one is echo $@. And we get back the 3 arguments, hacker, public radio. Now, the next thing I'm doing is to set the positional parameters using the set command. So what I've done here is set space -space $@space is cool. So what that will do is it will take all of the arguments as the positional parameters that we saw before, the hacker public radio, will expand them and then append is cool on the end of it. So if you then type echo $#, you get back 5. It's 5 arguments now. If you echo the arguments using $@, you get hacker public radio is cool. Now, if we, the next snippet, we use -2 and echo the result, we get back radio is cool. That's shifted hacker public off the end and into oblivion. Now, I created a very, very simple little script, which I didn't put the creation of it into this example, but it's in /tmp/test. If you don't know, /tmp is a place where you can put temporary files and they get deleted often you log out. I think it is. It depends. There are various rules that you can control which will change. The convention is that they are deleted when you log out. So anyway, this temp test file consists of /!/bin/bash. So that's a hash bang, which defines what you do at the start of script in order to say what script language it is and what's going to execute the content. Then there's an echo $hash and an echo $at and then exit. The thing I haven't noted here is that I've had to make this file executable in order to make it work. So if you simply type /tmp/test and then give it the three words, which in my case were rice, millet and wheat, then the script echoes back 3, because there are 3 arguments given to it, and it reports them rice, millet, wheat. So you can see the point of this was to show that running a script takes its own set of arguments, puts them in $1, $2, $3, and so forth, and when the script exits, the positional parameters in that environment are still intact. And I demonstrate that by echo $at, and I still get back radio is cool. So the last thing in this particular snippet is exit, and that terminates the shell that we opened up at the beginning. The idea was that you could maybe have a shot at doing this yourself to see the sort of things that that can be done. So the final thing is a downloadable script, bash20ex2.sh. This is a very simple script, and it's just to demonstrate positional parameters. So in it, there's a test if, followed by double square brackets, $#-ne2, close double square brackets, semicolon, then. So that is testing to see whether the number of arguments given to this script is 2. And if it's not, then it's an error and we want to exit. So the body of the if is echo, and then in double quotes, usage colon $0 word space count, close double quotes. So remember, $0 here is the name of the script itself. I didn't actually demonstrate that, if you want to download it and play with it, you will be able to see that that worked. So within the, after the fi of the end of the if statement, set two variables, word is equal to $1 and count is equal to $2. So then all I do is to take the word, that first parameter, and the count, and I just simply repeat the word count time. And that's done simply by a for loop, which starts at 1 and increments variable I up to the value of count. And for each instance, it echoes the word, in double quotes, dollar word, and it uses echo hyphen n to do this, so there's no new line after each instance of the word. Then the loop ends, and there's a further echo to produce a new line on the end of the concatenation of the words. So when you run this, and in this particular case, I ran it as /bash20_ex2.sh, goodbye 3, and it generates the following output, which is goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. I thought it's been really clever there. That's the end of this particular episode. And we'll call it quits there. Okay, I hope you found that useful. Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.